The war on crime over the past 40 years or so has resulted in lots of collateral damage, according to our guest this hour. We'll discuss that collateral damage, how it is destabilizing and dividing our communities, and what can be done about it this hour. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, June 17th. We'll find out how a criminal record can affect nearly every aspect of a person's life, including more difficulty obtaining employment and housing and an education long after a sentence has been served, and how a new report says that hurts us all. Should more be done to restore the rights and status of someone arrested or convicted of a crime? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. Rick Jones is the co-chair of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers Task Force on the Restoration of Rights and Status After Conviction. The task force held hearings around the country, taking testimony from more than 150 witnesses, leading to the new report, Collateral Damage, America's Failure to Forgive in the War on Crime, a roadmap to restore rights and status after arrest or conviction. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first off, what exactly do you mean, or does the report mean by collateral damage?
Well, what that means is that, you know, in our country, we have got some 65 million adults living with a criminal record, and that's a conservative number. That's one in every four adults in this country who has a criminal record. We have some 14 million new arrests every year and some 20 million people living with felony convictions. And the result of that is that once you've been arrested, really, once you've been charged, once you've been convicted, then not only are you sentenced and you do whatever it is your sentence is, you do the time or whatever the punishment is. Once you serve that time, there are all of these other consequences that prevent you from restoring yourself to society, prevent you from getting back the status that you had prior to whatever your brush with the law was. And those collateral consequences wreak havoc and are damaging to not only the individuals, but to their families. And they extend to employment, they extend to housing, they extend to benefits and the ability to get education and loans. Every aspect of a person's life is impacted. The ABA did a study, and there are some 45,000 plus collateral consequences that attach to an individual with a record throughout the municipalities, the counties, the states, and nationally. And these are all hurdles that prevent people from who legitimately want to go back to being productive members of society, who prevent them from doing so.
Yeah, so we can't probably talk about all 45,000 of those, but what's a big one?
Well, you know, big ones are particularly when I was listening to the lead-in, and I don't want to I don't deign to tread into Wisconsin politics, but I was listening to the lead-in, and your governor said he was not elected to focus on pardons, but rather the economic crisis. And one of the big ones is that people lose the right to vote. They lose their franchise. And so that's a mandatory collateral consequence that prevents millions and millions of people from being able to participate in democratic politics.
Yeah, I think in Wisconsin you cannot vote if you are still serving a probation as a felon. But once that's served, I think that right has been restored in Wisconsin. You can vote.
That's right, and in some states you don't lose that right. In some states, you're allowed to vote even if you're serving time.
I see. Well, besides losing the right to vote while still on probation in Wisconsin, what about what's the collateral consequence when it comes to employment? Why does a criminal conviction still hurt someone once the sentence has been served?
Well, nowadays, so many employers are doing background checks and are employing companies, consumer reporting agencies, that provide them with information with respect to people's backgrounds and criminal backgrounds. And they use those background checks to, before a person even gets their foot in the door, before they even sort of look to see whether or not they think this person can add value to the company, they use those background checks to exclude wholesale, you know, large blocks of people who have criminal records, criminal convictions, who have even been arrested. So much as an arrest will show up sometimes in a background check. And we know that these background checks and these records are notoriously inaccurate. Sometimes they're stale. They're not updated. A conviction or an arrest could have happened years ago. It could have not led to a conviction and still be reported, but people are having to struggle with these, and they're not even getting opportunities to present themselves or present their credentials because of the arrest, the charge, or the conviction. So it's really damaging in terms of people who are legitimately trying to seek employment.
Yeah, and I know for public employment in Wisconsin, you're not supposed to consider someone's a criminal background unless the crime was substantially related to the job that you would be doing. Would you like to remove that?
Well, I mean that I would like to see that is enforced. Actually,
yeah.
I mean there are no real standards. There's no guidance. There's nothing to really guide decision makers, to guide employers, to guide people who are housing officials and making decisions about housing as to what is relevant and what these relevancy standards should be. So we really need to. I would suggest that we should repeal those consequences. But to the extent that they're not repealed, we should at least have standards and criteria and guidelines that indicate clearly to people what is relevant, what is not relevant, the period of time for which it should be relevant or not, so that people can be guided and not just be left to the individual discretion of an individual decision maker who may or may not have any sense of what's relevant and what's not.
Yeah, plus I can imagine that if an employer, maybe a private employer too, gets a bunch of applications and there's a criminal background on some of the applicants, they're going to go in the circular file and not even be considered.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and how about housing? So if that shows up, a potential landlord's just going to say do the same thing?
Well, sure. Hmm. You know, there is a ban on the ability to live in public housing if you have a criminal conviction. So people are being banned from, prevented from living in public housing. Which is, as we all know, an important part of the sort of the fabric of society and the ability for people to have decent housing and decent living standards. But people who have a conviction are being banned from public housing. Their families are being banned from public housing. And that same problem extends to private landlords who are decision makers in the same way as employers. And like you said, if they have to choose between, you know, a number of different tenants, and one of them they see has an arrest or a conviction for just about anything, that's going to go in the circular file, that application, and they're going to go and move in a different direction. So it's really the same issue with respect to housing that it is with employment. You can't get a job, you can't find a place to live. You know, we really need to be repealing these collateral consequences, and to the extent that we're not repealing them, then we really need to have some clear standards, some clear guidelines, some clear criteria with respect to relevance, so that people are not subject to arbitrary and discretionary and sometimes even discriminatory actions by decision makers.
And how does a conviction hurt someone's educational opportunities?
You know, an inability to get loans. An inability to apply for student loans, to get student loans, to have the benefits, an ability to have such, you know, as a simple thing as an inability in some cases to have a driver's license so you can get back and forth to school, an inability to, you know, these like I said, these 45,000 collateral consequences impact people in such small and large ways that it impacts not only your ability to pay for college, but your higher education, but your ability to even get to the campus, your ability to live on campus, your ability to have work study or have a job that allows you to pay tuition. All of these things impact on a person's ability to go to school, to go to work, to have decent housing, to restore themselves to society.
So certainly it's evident that this would hurt the individual. How does this hurt the rest of us?
Well, when you have 65 million people who are living with a criminal record and you are, having 14 million new arrests a year, this touches everyone. There's no one who doesn't know someone, have a friend, beyond that, have a family member or a loved one, or themselves who's not touched. So, in a country where 65 million Americans, and that number is growing as we speak, are living with a criminal record, it touches all of us. It touches, you know, when it touches the head of a household, it touches that person's family. It touches that person's children. When it touches a child in a family, it touches the parents, it touches the siblings, it touches everyone. When someone's denied public housing, oftentimes the entire family has to leave that dwelling. When a person can't get a job, that person can't provide support for their family, and it impacts the family. It impacts the family's well-being. When a person faces deportation, a family member faces deportation, that family member may be the main breadwinner, but they're now facing deportation and being taken from that family unit. That impacts the family. I mean, it impacts the family profoundly in so many different directions and in so many different ways.
We are talking with Rick Jones, the co-chair of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers Task Force on the restoration of rights and status after conviction. And we are talking about this new report, Collateral Damage, America's Failure to Forgive in the War on Crime, a roadmap to restore rights and status after arrest or conviction. And we'll talk more about how to restore rights and status after a conviction. And we'll wonder if you think that we ought to do more to restore the rights and status of someone arrested or convicted of a crime. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a guest about the collateral damage that has occurred in America's war on crime, talking about how the consequences of a criminal record can affect every aspect of a person's life, including housing and employment and education, and how this has divided and destabilized our communities. We are talking about the report, Collateral Damage, America's Failure to Forgive in the War on Crime. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions on whether more should be done to restore the rights and status of someone convicted of a crime. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Our guest was involved in compiling this report. Rick Jones is the co-chair of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers Task Force on the restoration of rights and status after conviction. We have full lines, Rick Jones, and I do want to get to our callers' questions and comments. But let's talk some about, you have a lot of recommendations in this report. Let's talk, though, about the incentives that you think the government can provide to help, clear up some of these collateral consequences?
Well, I think that the government, the federal government and state governments as well, and local governments can do a lot of things to change the mindset of our country, change the nature of our country from one that is thinking about punishment and being punitive and you know, arresting and incarcerating individuals and prosecuting individuals, to one that is much more forgiving and understanding and redemptive and restorative. And so one of the things that governments can do is to right off the bat repeal all of these existing consequences that have no bearing on public safety. And then they can also avoid enacting new ones and additional ones. Change the paradigm, change the dynamic. Let's not, you know, be a nation that is forever unforgiving and forever punitive, but let's stop with the collateral consequences. Let's not enact new ones. And then let's implement meaningful procedures so that people who are living with a criminal record can understand the process and go about getting themselves restored, whether it's through the pardon process, whether it's through some relief at sentencing, whether it's through relief certificates of relief from disabilities, certificates of relief from collateral consequences. Let's establish for those people who are living under these harsh consequences and are suffering this collateral damage, let's implement clear procedures that they can employ and follow so that they can be restored and relieved of these consequences. So we can repeal the existing, we can stop with all of the new and additional ones, and we can implement policies and procedures that clearly indicate to people how they can go about getting themselves restored to society.
And we'll go into more detail, but let's get some callers first. Rich in Madison is with us. Hello, Rich.
Yeah, hi.
Yes, go ahead with your story.
Yeah, I had a first and only DUI conviction about 4 years ago, and I'm in the medical field and I do traveling, and I'm licensed in 4 or 5 states, which doesn't affect that. But when I have to fill, it's a competitive, traveling has gotten very competitive, so when I fill out an application for that particular facility, even though I'm working through an agency, they ask the question inevitably that whether I have had a conviction on a DUI. So I fill it out because I feel I'm obligated. And when I do, I notice that even though with 28 years experience and never having a problem on the jobs I've had, I notice that them choosing me as an applicant, I don't get callbacks anymore, so it's getting more and more difficult to find work in the area, even though I've proven myself very worthy in the field.
So an example of this, Rick Jones?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are a number of things that Rich said, and I appreciate the call. You know, there are millions of people just like Rich all throughout this country who may have made a mistake at some point in their life, but who are, and you can tell just from listening to Rich, who are in no way, shape, or form bad people or people who should be second-class citizens, and who deserve the right to be able at some point in their lives to put this behind them and to move on. I mean, Rich has 28 years of experience. He probably has a family that he supports. He's probably very good at what he does. And there is no reason that a mistake that he made at an earlier point in time, which, you know, which was a mistake, needs to be a mark of Cain and needs to follow him around for the rest of his life. There has to be a time when people can put these things. You know, he's paid his debt to society. He's done whatever it was he had to do, whatever it was he was sentenced to do as a result of that conviction. And now that should be put behind him. It should not continually be a bar to his being able to move on in life and to be a good, solid, tax-paying, productive member of society. Rich is a a classic example of the collateral damage we're talking about in this report, and I thank him for the call.
Yeah, thank you, Rich. Dwayne in Park Falls is with us now. Hello, Dwayne.
Oh, good morning. Boy, this is a heck of a subject. I've often wondered about the felony aspect, actually, of the crimes. You know, it seems as though how nonviolent people, or the crimes, I should say, are the felons are just easily attached to people anymore. I often wondered about if that's the new state or government gun control even coming on, because the felons, first of all, are not able to have that ownership of any kind of wild guns in particular.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have just 30 seconds before a news break, and we can pick it up after the news, but Rick Jones, not being allowed to own a gun, is that a collateral consequence?
That's another one of the mandatory collateral consequences that you can't exercise your Second Amendment right to bear arms. I mean, it's just another one of those mandatory consequences that many times has no bearing or no relation to any kind of public safety effort. It's just an across the board ban that doesn't make sense.
We'll check news and then we'll be back continuing to talk about this report, Collateral Damage: America's Failure to Forgive in the War on Crime. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a guest about the collateral damage that has occurred during America's war on crime. And wondering if you know someone who has a criminal record who is now experiencing difficulty when it comes to employment or housing or education. And we wonder if you think someone's criminal record should follow them for life or not. Once you've served your time, should you be forgiven for your crime? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Rick Jones is the co-chair of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers Task Force on the Restoration of Rights and Status After Conviction. The task force held hearings around the country, taking testimony from more than 150 witnesses, leading to the report, Collateral Damage: America's Failure to Forgive in the War on Crime. And again, we have many callers. I want to get back to them as soon as possible. But let me ask you, Rick Jones, why should America forgive someone, especially with who has committed a serious crime against society? Oops, I have to push the right button in order to hear you, so go ahead.
That's a great question. None of us is simply and solely the one bad thing or the worst thing that we've ever done. We're all full human beings who all of us are imperfect, all of us fall short. None of us is without sin, but we all hope that when we make a mistake or when we do something wrong, that there is recognition of that and maybe even punishment if appropriate, but that there's also forgiveness, that there's also redemption, that there's also restoration. It's the tenets of any religion that you might practice, and it's sort of the models by which, you know, I would think and I would hope that we all live, that we're not an endlessly unforgiving country, an endlessly unforgiving nation, and we're not a nation of criminals. We're not all bad people. We don't need to have, you know, over 2 million people, many for nonviolent things and for drug crimes, you know, in prisons and jails all over this country. We have more people in prisons and jails in this country than any other place in the world, and we are not a nation of criminals. We are not an unforgiving nation. We should be about about rehabilitation and restoration and forgiveness, and not saying that, you know, once you've done something bad, then you are banished from society, then you are permanently a second class citizen. None of us would pass that test. We've all, whether we've been arrested for it or whether we've been caught for it, none of us, not one of us, no one listening to this radio station, no one who's going to get up and go to work this morning, no one who's going to do any of the things that happen throughout the course of a day in America can say that they have not, done something wrong or fallen short in some way. And maybe they weren't caught for it, but for those who were, they deserve the right to rehabilitate themselves. They deserve the right to have a second chance. We're about second chances in this country, and they deserve the right to restore themselves to society.
Jim in Waukesha is with us now. Hello, Jim.
Hello. This is a subject dear to my heart, I guess you could say. Back in the 80s, unfortunately, I got into selling drugs. I served my time. Upon release, I ended up getting an addiction to those same drugs. So then I also got an in-depth understanding of what it was I was doing. Now, with this understanding, now, because I got my time in Virginia, I have no right to vote. I have no real avenue to express the views of that I've gained through living through what's going on. And so not only is it hurting me, it's hurting other people too. You know, it's hurting my kids. My kids have suffered with the same kind of situation. Luckily, I found a program that helps me deal with this. They've come along with it too. You know, I applaud what this guy is doing. I think it should go further. I think there should be a real look at the whole penal system, and, you know, instead of locking up, maybe training some people that are in a financial situation that they can't get out of, about how to go about work. And you know, we get habits and we get ruts we're stuck in, and people should be guided into new habits if they're having to be locked up. Yeah. So I don't know. Like I said, I appreciate what you're doing, Guy, and keep up the good work.
Well, Jim, thank you for your courage in calling in, too. So here, convicted in the 80s of selling drugs, addicted to those drugs, can't vote, and had some suggestions. What's your response, Rick Jones?
Was that Jim?
Yes.
Yeah, I think Jim hit on a really important point, and I'm glad that he did, because it gives me an opportunity to talk about it a little bit. One of the most important things that we ought to be doing in our criminal justice system to keep people out of this permanent underclass, to keep people out of this second-class status for life, to keep people from being, you know, collaterally damaged for life, is we ought to really be, in our criminal justice system, focused on diversion and avoiding convictions. People should not be getting arrested and convicted in the first place for, you know, let's go back to Rich, you know, that DUI he had, you know, 28 years ago. You know, what should have happened with Rich is, rather than being arrested and charged and put through the system and saddled with a conviction, he should have been deferred. There should have been some opportunity for him to go and get training, for him to go to some sort of counseling session or something like that outside of the criminal justice system to help him understand, you know, the perils of alcoholism, to understand the dangers and perils of driving while drinking, to give him options for, you know, if you're at a bar or you're at somewhere and you have had too much to drink, other ways to get home. Just an educational piece, a supportive piece, a training piece to help him so that he will never make that mistake again, and so that now, 28 years later, he's not going to be impacted. We should be the point Jim made about looking at our entire criminal justice system is 100% correct. We ought to be on the front end saying to ourselves, do we really need to be arresting all of these folks? Do we really need to be incarcerating and convicting and prosecuting all of these folks who may have made a mistake but are not bad people and are not criminals and don't need to go to jail and don't need to have a conviction and don't need to be saddled for the rest of their life with these problems. Let's divert them on the front end. Never put these – I mean, we've got enough to do in the criminal justice system. We don't need to be bringing in, you know, 14 million new people a year. These are not 14 million people who are bad, hardened criminals who need to be in the criminal justice system. So Jim is exactly right. We need to be doing stuff on the front end to divert and avoid people being arrested and convicted in the first place. And that comes from the defense community. Defense lawyers have to be about the business of avoiding these convictions. Prosecutors need to be enlightened and understand and aware of these collateral consequences and move for diversion. And judges as well need to understand the damage that happens and in the appropriate cases be able to provide the relief from the bench that avoids these consequences that we've heard about from Rich and Jim. So I think he is absolutely 100% correct that we need to take a real hard look at what we're doing in our criminal justice system. Could I just say one other thing?
Yes.
before we move on to something else? I just wanted to direct people to the website where they can find the report, and that is www.nacdl, Nancy Apple CDL, Candy David Lynette, .org, NACDL.org. /restoration, the word restoration, and /roadmap report. That's all one word. So it's NACDL.org, /restoration, /roadmap report. Thank you.
Yeah, and if it's not there already, we will provide a link to that on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. The next caller we have is Victor in Waukesha. Hello, Victor.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
My arrest and conviction happened 19 years ago in Illinois, and I was working for, I'm 64 years old, disabled, and I was working part-time for a cleaning company, and they placed me at the courthouse, and one day I come into work, and I didn't put down that I had been arrested or convicted 19 years ago, and the sheriff barred me from the courthouse. My boss was kind enough. She said, Victor, I don't care what happened 19 years ago. So she placed me at, interestingly enough, at two banks to clean at night. But I think they should be limited to maybe 10 years back from incarceration or arrest. And I think in Illinois they do that. You have a conviction in the last 10 years. I think that would suffice.
Yeah. So what do you think of that idea?
Well, there's two things that come out of Victor's question. I appreciate it. The first is that, you know, there are studies, and you can find them in the report if you go to the website and look at it, that suggests that, for people who have been convicted and there's a passage of time, after 3 years or so, those people are less likely, no more likely or less likely to reoffend than anybody else in society. So clearly there are studies that show, credible studies that show, and you can find them in the report, that with the passage of time and no further offenses, that individuals are no more likely and in many cases less likely because of their experiences to have a second brush with the law. So there certainly is every reason in the world to say to someone who's been out of trouble for 19 years I have no issue with you. I have no problem employing you. I have no problem having you live next door to me. I have no problem having you sit next to me in a classroom. It's just wrong. It doesn't make sense, and it's against. But the other thing I want to say about what Victor said quickly is that I applaud his employer. I think I heard Victor to say that despite the fact that he was barred in some way from completely doing his job, his employer stuck by him. And I think that we need to be educating decision makers, employers, housing folks, landlords, and others. About the you know, the need and the obligation, really, to be doing that, and also to be giving them incentives. You asked me earlier what governments can do. I mean, I think that, you know, tax credits for people who hire people who've been for, you know, have a criminal record, bonding, free bonding to provide insurance, immunity from negligent hiring liability. All of these are things that governments can do and laws we can pass that will encourage and incentivize folks to go about employing and hiring and giving opportunities to people who are living with convictions and with criminal records. And so I thank Victor for that call.
We are talking about the collateral consequences of a criminal record with a guest who says more needs to be done to restore the rights and status of someone convicted of a crime, that a criminal record should not follow an individual for life. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Rick Jones, the co-chair of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers Task Force on the Restoration of Rights and Status After Conviction, talking about the report, Collateral Damage, America's Failure to Forgive in the War on Crime, and the recommendations that are in the report to restore the rights and status of someone who is arrested or convicted of a crime so that these collateral consequences don't make it more difficult to get a job or to find housing or to get an education. He says that this collateral damage hurts society, not just the individual. Let's go to our next caller, Duane in Hayward. Hello, Duane.
Good morning, Joy, and yes. I think it extends far beyond criminal activity. Computer ages nowadays, just a couple clicks, if you know where to search the court records, you can find everything from forfeitures to minor misdemeanors. You know, someone gets convicted of open carrying alcohol when they were in college. Boop, boop. In a click or two, it's there. Years ago, you used to be able to move away, and it took a real effort to find your criminal record or a forfeiture record. You had to know which county they were convicted in. You had to know what state they were convicted in. You had to actually go to the courthouse, dig through paper records. I think this should be mandatory. The listing of forfeitures, delisting of minor misdemeanors after 5 years or so if you had a forfeiture. And no other ones, poof, it's gone. Every public record is erased.
Yeah.
And because nowadays, you just can't get away from it.
Yeah, that's a lot different these days, Rick Jones, that all that stuff is on the Internet.
Well, Duane is exactly right, and it raises a number of issues. One is that, it's why we really do need to change this paradigm. It's why we need to have a national change in our mindset about the type of country that we are. And that we are a country that's forgiving, and that we are a country that's redemptive, and that we are a country that wants to restore people to their rights and status after a conviction, because Duane is right. You're not going to be able anymore to hide the conviction. You're not going to be able to hope that people forget about it, because it's a mouse click away. It's a keystroke away. So he's absolutely right that we have to change the paradigm in this country, and we have to realize that we're not a nation of criminals, but we are a forgiving, redemptive nation, and that people are not the worst thing that they've ever done, and that we need to go back to allowing people to be productive members of society despite the fact that they may have had a run-in with law enforcement at some point. The other thing that's important about what Duane said was what we talked about earlier, which is avoidance, not getting the arrest, not getting the charge, not getting the conviction in the first place, diverting people out of the criminal justice system who really don't need to be there and who have every opportunity to and every hope of becoming good, contributing, positive positive members of society without being labeled with a, or saddled with a criminal conviction. We ought to be diverting people out and giving them a chance before we just saddle them with this conviction for the rest of their lives. 14 million new arrests a year is just ridiculous and way too many, and it's a perversion, really, of the criminal justice system. And then finally, in terms of what he said about the ability to get these records, we really ought to have some very stringent regulation of individuals who are in the business. You know, we have commoditized. We have made it a commodity. We've created a market around selling rap sheets and selling criminal histories and selling mugshots. And there are even police agencies that sell for profit people's rap sheets, and it's wrong. And so we ought not commoditize it. First of all, it ought not be a market. We ought not create a market around it. And to the extent that it exists, it ought to be heavily regulated. People who are in the business of buying and selling rap sheets and giving that information, background checks and other things, and websites and mugshot.com and all these different places, they really ought to be regulated such that the information that they are passing along, to the extent they're able to pass it along, is accurate and is updated and is checked, so that they're not passing along, you know, oh, this person was arrested 20 years ago, and that prevents them from all kind of opportunities. But nobody ever says, but that arrest never led to a conviction. It never led to a conviction, but nonetheless, the mere fact that there's an arrest record out there gets passed along, and now this person is in a world of trouble when it comes to all these things that we've been talking about. So there really needs to be stringent regulation. And lastly, there ought to be a very clear, easy, accessible way for people who have been arrested and who have been convicted to be able to go in and update and clean up their rap sheet. If they were granted a pardon, if they got a certificate of release, if they've done some rehabilitation, there ought to be a way for them to, on their own motion, and not overly complicated so that you have to jump through 500 hurdles, but an easy, efficient way for them to go in and clean up their rap sheet and make it updated. So if somebody is going to be looking at it, they're at least looking at accurate, correct information.
Yeah. Well, Rick Jones, we have just a minute to go. Can I ask you to give us the closing argument? What if we don't do anything?
Well, if we don't do anything, it's only going to get worse. You know, we've got 65 million and counting people who are living with a criminal record. We've got 14 million new arrests a day. We've got over 2 million people incarcerated. We've got one of the biggest mental health crises in the world, because we're not helping people who need the help. Instead, we're throwing them in jails. We've got, you know, the president said the other day, we've got a new shooting in a school every week. And this doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. We've got more people in prison for all kinds of nonviolent crimes and misdemeanors than any other place, you know, in the country or any other place on the planet. And if we don't,
we got it. It'll only get worse. And I'm sorry, we're out of time, Rick Jones. We will put the link to the report on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.